Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Baba Kama daf Tzadi Ches. We are holding at the top of Tzadi Ches Amar Aleph, four lines from the bottom, from the top, Amar Rabba. The Gemara and Amar Aleph today is going to continue discussing various cases of Gezel and damaging somebody else's property and whether you'd be obligated to pay or you'd be potter in various cases. And then the Gemara and Amar Beis is mostly going to discuss Omrin bi Surei Hanah Harei Shol Chalifanecha. If you have somebody else's property and it becomes aser b'hana throughout that period, can you just give it back to them and say, Harei shel chalifanecha, here is your item, exactly the way it was when I took it from you or when I had it, granted that it changed and became aser b'hana, but maybe that's not something you're responsible for. And in that discussion, the Gemara is going to bring up various topics in damages, garmi, grama, exactly what the difference is between all of those, we'll have to get to, but a longer topic. So let's start on the top of Tzadi Ches Amar Aleph, Amar Rabba. Amar Rabba, Hazorik Mabea Shel Chavero Liyam HaGadol, Potter. Rabba says, let's say a person throws a coin that belongs to his friend into the Yam HaGadol, into the big sea, let's assume the Mediterranean Sea, you'd be Potter. You'd be exempt in such a case. My Taima, why is it that you're Potter? So the Gemara says, Amar Hamanach Kamecha Ibayis Shakle. Because you can respond to your friend and say, your coin is right over there, it's right in front of you. If you want it, just go get it, right? You can just get deep sea divers, or you can go find the coin in the sea. So I'm potter because I didn't really take it. It's really right in front of you. But says the Gemara, Vahani Mili Bitzlulin, the Kachazile. That claim that the coin is right in front of you, just go get it, only works if the water is clear, in which case you can actually see the coin in the water. Avala Kurin, the Lo Kachazile, Lo. But if the water is cloudy, if the water is dirty, in a way that you wouldn't be able to see the coin, then you can't make such a claim of Hamanach Kamecha, or Hamunach Kamecha, that the coin is just right there in front of you and go get it, because the person can't see it, so there's no way that he can just go get it.
So obviously, if it was in the middle of the Mediterranean, where even with clear waters you can't see it, you can't say Hamunach Kamecha.
Right, so you're saying the Gemara is a little bit strange that it says Liyam HaGadol, which seems to be talking about the Mediterranean, right? We're on the same page about that.
But not
and then it says Vahani Mili Tzlulin. When is it ever Tzlulin by the Yam HaGadol?
Only by the shore. Only near.
Oh, by the shore you're
saying. Seashore.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Right, that would make sense. And Rashi just points out here that in this whole case, even though the person would have to hire deep sea divers to go get the coin, mentioned.
Not deep sea divers. I think you have to say,
divers, let's say, or fine. Yeah, people who are going to go into the sea. That doesn't matter. You're not chayav for that because Rashi says that's just grumma. That's just indirectly causing damage or causing financial loss. We have a klal in general that grumma benizikin causing damage or financial loss indirectly is pater. So even though the guy has to get divers, people to go find the coins for him, that would be not something you're obligated for. I think this came up a few years back. I remember this because I had just learned Baba Kama, and then I saw this in the news that like a famous athlete had lost a diamond earring in some sea somewhere, and it was expected, it was really expensive. He was going to have to hire divers. I don't think they were able to find it. So that's exactly Rabba's case, speaking to that football player and to all of us.
You have to be able to see it.
It says the Gemara, Vahani Mili Da'adi Aduye. The only time in which you could say, Hamanach Kamecha, go get your coin, it's right in front of you, is if you basically indirectly caused the person to lose the coin. Da'adi Aduye literally is that you hit the person's hand, and that caused the coin to fly out of his hand and into the sea. But if you took it biyadayim of ashakle biyaday, if you take it by hand and throw it into the sea, then migzal gazle, that would be as if you stole it from him. That's real theft. And hashava bayi me'aved, and you'd have to return it. So it would be incumbent on you to find the people to remove it from the sea and bring it back to him. You can't just say hamunach kamecha because you really did an action of theft. You really stole the coin from him and threw it into the sea. So Rabba's din that you'd be potter would no longer apply there. Okay, so that's Rabba's din. If you take somebody's coin and throw it into the sea, you're exempt. Now, Masiv Rava, Rava asks the kasha on Rabba's din, because the Brisa says, Ein mechalin al mos she'ein on birshuto. We have a principle that you're not allowed to be mechalel kedushas meiser sheni. You can't be mechalel, you can't redeem the sanctity of fruits of meiser sheni onto coins if the coins are not in your possession, if the coins are not in your rishus. So Ketzad, says the Gemara, what's exactly the case of trying to redeem fruits of Meiser Sheni onto coins that are not in your rishus? Hayulo mos bekistera o behar hamelech, o shenafal kistel liyam hagadol, ein mechalalin. The case is, let's say you have coins which are in kistera, which Rashi tells us is makom behu rachok meod, it's a place and it's very far away, v'yesh bo sakanas drachem, and it's also dangerous to travel there, v'ein shayaros mitzuyo sham. And caravans are not constantly traveling in between Kistera in other places, or in Kistera in general. So let's say you had Moses in this far-off, dangerous place, or in Har Melech, which is another place, or if your wallet or your bag of coins fell into the Great Sea, into the Mediterranean, you wouldn't be able to be Mechalel, you wouldn't be able to redeem Kedushas Maaser Sheni off the Peros onto the coins. So this brisa poses a major kasha on Rabbah, because it says that if coins fall into the Mediterranean, that's considered not birshuso, it's not in your possession, and you can't redeem Kedushas Maaser Sheni, you can't redeem Peros of Maaser Sheni onto these coins. So how could Rabbah say that if you hit indirectly your friend's coin into the Yamagadol, that you could just say, Hamunach Kamecha, it's right in front of you, go and get it, if by Maaser Sheni, that's considered not in your Rishus? These seem to be at odds with each other. So Amar Rabba, Rabba says, it's not a kasha at all. Shaini le'inyan Maaser de'be'inun matzui biyadcha. Rabba says, don't bring me a raya for Maaser Sheni, because Maaser Sheni is completely different. By Maaser Sheni, we need the coins to be matzui, to be present in your hands. Why do we need that? De'rachmana Amar v'tzarta ha'kesef biyadcha Vileka, because the Torah requires that when you redeem the Kedushas Maaser Sheni onto coins, you need to have the coins in your hands. Vitzarta hakesef biyadcha, that you redeem the Kedushas Maaser Sheni off of the Peros onto the coins, which are in your hands, and then you'll take those coins up to Yerushalayim to make the travel easier than just carrying a bunch of fruit up to Yerushalayim. So by Maaser Sheni, it makes sense that you can't be Mechalel Kedushas Maaser Sheni off of the Peros onto coins, which are in the bottom of the Mediterranean Sea, because that's lacking in the Gzeres HaKasev, that's lacking in the Torah requirement of having the Kesef in your hands. But don't bring me a riot to Gzela. Maybe if I accidentally or indirectly hit my friend's coin into the Yamagado, I could still tell him, Haresh El Cholifanech.
In the case of knocking your coin, knocking your friend's coin into the sea, in the case of Gzela in general, you have to, some machlokes, whether you have to let the person, the Nigazol, know that you stole it from him and you're giving it back to him, or if it's enough to put it back in his Rishus. But everybody agrees it has to be back in his Rishus.
Right.
How can this be? How can something laying in the Mediterranean be considered a person's Rishus and considered returned?
Mm-hmm. I don't know, if you read this Rashi about Hazorik Mabeya Shachaver Biyam Potter, let's read the Rashi Potter, but I'll try to answer the question before we do it just based on the Rashi. I think what Rashi is saying is, granted, like Moshe is asking, this is not considered return to the person's rishus, but that whole question doesn't even get off the ground. Why not? Because it's not even considered as if you ever took it from his rishus, right? In order to be required to send it back, but we'll see the Rashi inside, hopefully it'll make it clear, you would have to take it, and then there's a debate. Do you have to inform him that you returned it, or do you just have to return it to his rishus? But if it was never taken from his rishus to begin with, then it wouldn't necessarily be considered returned back, but you don't need to return it. So let's see Rashi and see if that becomes clear. That's the way I understood it. Pater, right? So again, Rabba's case, that if you throw your friend's coin, which we eventually define to mean you indirectly hit it into the sea, you'd be putter. As the Gemara explains, that you didn't take it with your hand, rather you just hit it. Mm-hmm. That the person was holding in their hands, you came and hit their hand from below, and that caused the coin to fly into the sea. Since the water is clear, and you could see the coin in the bottom of the sea, you could say to him, it's right in front of you, and it's not lost. So the way I'm interpreting Ve'ina Avuda, right, which I think would clarify it, is you never even took it from him, it's right there.
Because, I mean, you can be medayek from the Gemara itself. But Avul Shakle, Biyade, Mixel Gazel, Hashava Boy.
Right, nice,
that,
exactly.
That Hashava needs to be into his Rishus.
Right, and only then is it considered Mixel Gazel. Yeah. So once you tell me you stole it and it needs Hashava, so then tell me, what does Hashava mean? Does it mean just to the Rishus? Does it mean also inform him that it's in his Rishus? But so long as it's not stolen, so long as it's the Adya Aduye, you'd be putter, eina avuda, it's not considered zela, and that's why you'd be putter. And then Rava brought Akasha from Maaser Sheni, which we just saw, and Rava says, no, there's an explicit gzeirah there that you'd be obligated to have the money in your hands in order to redeem it, but by zela, where you didn't actually steal it, you're going to be putter, you don't have to pay the person. Great. Now Rava has a new case of indirect damage. V'omer Rava, hashaf matbea shel chavero, putter. Let's say a person rubs and basically deteriorates the coin of his friend, that would also be putter, even though we're assuming you're damaging in some slight way the coin of your friend, you're going to be exempt. So why is that? My time asks, Gemara, why are you exempt? You haven't really done anything. We know sometimes you have coins, or let's say dollar bills, which are more worn out than other ones, but they're still valid as currency. They still take that dollar bill, even though it's ripped down the middle and you taped it back together. For some reason, they still accept that in the store. So if you cause some deterioration to the money, you're still putter because you haven't really done anything to the coin. But the Gemara qualifies that statement again. Bahani mili demachye bekurnasa betarshe. It's only true that if you deteriorate the coin of your friend, you'd be putter. If you hit it with a hammer and you smoothen it out, betarshe. If that's the injury that you cause, if that's the damage that you cause to the coin, then you'd be exempt. Aval shayfe b'shufina chasure chasre. But if you file down the coin with a file and cause it to deteriorate or be damaged in that way, then we would assume that's actually a direct damage, and you would be obligated. Says Rashi, chasure chasre umamishu velo grama. That's considered direct damage. That's not considered indirect. That's not grama. Yeah. In time of the Rabbah Bekulu, Mishum Grama Benizikin Hu Upater. Rashi just tells us a general call here that in all these statements of Rabbah, we saw first by throwing the coin into the sea, now by deteriorating the coin, there are going to be more statements of Rabbah. Rabbah is always exempting a person for the reason of Grama Benizikin, for indirect damage, causing loss indirectly. But that's why we always qualify and say where you do cause the damage directly. If you file it with a file, or if you take it out of the guy's hand and throw it into the sea, that's direct damage, and then you're going to be Chayev. Okay, so now ask the Gemara another kasha. Again, Rava bringing a brisa against Rava. Masiv Rava, hiko al eino besimaa. Let's say you hit a person on his eye and you cause his eye to go blind, or al azno v'chersho, or if you hit them on their ear and cause them to go deaf. Eved yotze behen lecheros. In such a case, if this person was your slave, then the eved would go free. But keneged eino, we saw this brisa I think last week also. Keneged eino v'eino roa. If you hit him, let's go back to Rashi over there on Sadi Aleph. If you hit him on the wall opposite his eye, and that causes him to lose sight in the eye, or keneged ozno ve'eino shomea, or you hit him on the wall opposite his ear, and that causes his ear to go deaf, ein eved yotze behen lecheiros. In both of these cases, an eved would not go to cheiros. And the Gemara is assuming that this is a kasha against Rabbah. Why? Because as Rashi explains, alma afal gav de lo chasre, if even though you haven't actually damaged the person, when you hit his ear directly and cause him to go deaf, you haven't really done anything direct to the ear other than cause the hearing to be lost. Since you did an action with your body on the other person's body, that's not considered grama, that's considered mamish. Or they changed the girsa of al-korcha, chasro, damim, then maisehu. So the same should be true. Why did Rabba say that if you caused the coin to deteriorate with a hammer that you'd be exempt, and only if you filed it with a file would you be obligated? Hitting it with a hammer is also an action which is more concrete, and even though you're not really damaging the coin, it should be no different than hitting a person's ear, where you don't really damage the ear, but you cause it to lose its hearing. And just like Rabbah would agree to this brisa that you'd be obligated if you hit the person's ear and cause him to go deaf, then Rabbah should also say that if you deteriorate the coin, if you damage the coin with a hammer, that you should also be obligated. So the Gemara says this whole kasha, this whole brisa that we're bringing, is not a good kasha at all. Because Rabbah l'taymeh, Rabbah here is going l'shitaso. The Amar Rabbah, chersho l'aviv nerag, she'efsha l'charisha belo chabura, de tifta de dama nafal le'be'one. So Rabbah says that if a person causes his father to go deaf, they would be killed. Why would they be killed? There's no issur of causing your father to go deaf, or if there's an issur, you're not killed for it. Because Rabbah says it's impossible that you would cause your father to go deaf without causing him a wound, without causing him an injury. And we have a pasuk in this week's parsha that I think if you hit your father, even if he doesn't die, you'd be obligated to die. All right, and Rabbah says that the reason if you cause them to go deaf, it's impossible that there would not be a wound there, is because we assume that what caused the person to go deaf is that a drop of blood fell into the ear, some drop of blood came out of the ear somewhere, and that's what caused your father to go deaf. So Rabbah is assuming that in this brisa which we brought, which says, al ozno v'chersho, if you hit the person on their ear and they go deaf, that you'd be obligated. That's assuming that there is an actual wound. That's assuming that there is direct damage, that the person has blood that goes into their ear. So in such a case, Rabbah would say that you're obligated. But that's not parallel to a person deteriorating a coin with a hammer, because in the case of the hammer and the coin, we're assuming there is no concrete damage that's done. So the Braisa, the Gemara that Rava brought, was assuming that al ozna v'chersha, when you hit a person in the ear, there is no direct damage, there's no wound that I can see, and nonetheless you're obligated, so you should be obligated in the case of the hammer as well. And the Gemara's answer is that Rabba is assuming l'shitaso. Rabba is consistent with what he holds. When you cause your father to go deaf, that we assume there is a wound, we assume there is blood that comes out, and that's why you'd be chai of misa for injuring your father and causing him to go deaf. The Mela, the same is true when you hit a person on the ear and cause him to go deaf. The reason that you're obligated there is because there is a direct damage, but that's no longer parallel to a person damaging a coin with a hammer. So Rabba deflects the kasha. Right, so Rabba is 2 for 2. He had 2 statements. Rabba posed 2 questions, and Rabba deflected them both. Now says the Gemara Vayter, "V'amar Rabba, hatzorim ozen paraso shel chaveiro pater. If a person damages the ear of his friend's cow, you would also be pater. My time, huh? Why are you pater in this case?" So says the Gemara, "Para k'dekaima kaima, t'lo avid v'lo midi. The cow is assumed to be left exactly the way it was before. You haven't really done anything because, okay, it's still a cow. You just damaged the ear a tiny bit, but it's not a significant damage. The kulu shvarim lav legabi mizbeach kaimi." The Gemara is implicitly asking a question and saying, well, you have caused the damage to this cow if you were to use the cow as a korban, because even though tsarim ozen paraso, if you damage the ear, that's not such a significant injury. It would still make the animal ineligible to be brought in the mizbeach. So the Gemara says you don't have to worry about that because we don't assume that all oxen, that all cows, are destined to be offered on the Mizbeach. So if you just injure your friend's cow, we can't say, oh, well, the only way that damage is significant is if he's brought in the Mizbeach, and you have to assume that he's going to be brought as a korban, and therefore you're obligated. No, we assume you're potter because you haven't really done anything significant, and it's unlikely that this cow is going to be used as a korban. Even if it is going to be used as a korban, you're not obligated for damaging a person's cow's ear. So Masiv Rava, Rava again wants to pose a question against Rava's din, that ha'osa malacha b'mei chatas v'paras chatas pater midinei adam b'chaya v'dinei shamayim. Rava says, we have a brisa which says that if you do malacha, if you do work with the water of the para aduma, or if you do work with the para aduma itself, which is not allowed, you'd be pater midinei adam, you'd be exempt from requirements from punishment in this world, in the human court, but you'd be obligated in Dina Shemayim, you'd be obligated in the heavenly courts. And Rava makes a diuk, Rava makes an inference from this case and says, Malacha hu delo minkar hezeka. The only reason you're exempt in this world, exempt in the human courts, in this case, is because you're dealing with malacha. You're dealing with work where you use the water or the para for work, which you weren't supposed to do, but it's lo minkar hezeka. The damage that you cause to the water or to the para is not recognizable. Aval tzorem de minkar hezeka, hachanami de mechayev v'dinei adam. But if you injure the cow's ear, where the damage is recognizable, then it sounds like you'd be obligated even in this world, even in the human court. So that's a question on Rabba. How could Rabba say that if you injure your friend's cow's ear, you'd be exempt? The Braisa would seem to indicate by inference that if you injure your friend's cow, you'd be obligated. So answers the Gemara, Amri, hu adin da afilu tzorem pater. Really, even if you injure your friend's cow's ear, you would still be exempt. And this brisa which you're quoting me about doing work with the water of the para aduma or the para aduma itself is really just teaching us that by malacha, when you do work with these items, even though you can't recognize the damage on the water or on the cow, you're still chayav b'dinei shamayim, you're still obligated in the heavenly court. So don't bring me a question from this brisa by inference that you should be obligated when you do a concrete damage. Really, the Braisa would agree that even if you do concrete damage, you're still pater b'dinei adam, you're still not obligated in this worldly court. And the Braisa was just coming to tell us that even by malacha, even when you do work, which is not recognizable, which is not a recognizable damage, you're still obligated b'dinei shamayim. So again, Rabba defends the question. Now we have another din of Rabba. The Amar Rabba, Hasorev Shtaro Shel Chaveiro Pater, the Amar Lei, Niyara Kalai Minach. Rabba says, if you burn the shtar, the document of your friend, you're pater. Why are you exempt in such a case? Because you could say to the person, all I did was burn some of your paper. But let's say the person has a shtar, which says that somebody owes them $100,000. So you would think that's a major damage to burn a shtar that's worth to this person $100,000. But what Rabba says is that's essentially grama, as Rashi told us before, that's just indirect damage, because all you're really doing at the end of the day is burning the person's paper. You're not really burning $100,000. So Moskif la Rami Bar Chama, hey chidami. Rami Bar Chama asks a question. He says, what's the case of burning somebody else's shtar? If we have witnesses who know what was written in the shtar, who know that it said that the person was owed $100,000, then why don't they just write a new shtar? Like, it should be irrelevant that the person burned the other person's shtar, because if we know what was written in the shtar, then we can just write a new shtar. And if there are no witnesses testifying what was written in the shtar, then how do we know what was written in the shtar? So why is this relevant? Maybe the shtar that was burned didn't have anything written in it, and it was only a piece of paper. So basically, Mimanov Shachar, Rami Bar Chama says, this case makes no sense. If we know the information that was in the shtar, we should just reproduce the shtar. And if we don't know the information that was in the shtar, then maybe there was nothing going on over here. There was nothing actually written in the shtar. Tosfos just points out over here.
Why is that a kasha? I mean,
the second half or the first half?
Rabbi said, you're potter if you burn the shtar. There's nothing to do. So it's the Gemara is saying right.
The Gemara is saying right. Well, the Gemara is saying right. I think the first half of the question, I mean, really the whole question, is saying why do we need Rabbah to tell us this? If we can just reproduce the shtar, then nothing happens. So let's just reproduce it.
What are you, Mike Mashmalan?
What are you telling me? Uh-huh. And if we don't know what was written in the shtar, then again, Mike Mashmalan, obviously you're not obligated because maybe it was just a piece of paper and there's nothing written in there. I think Gemara had suggested that if we have witnesses who know what was written in the shtar, that we should just reproduce the shtar. So Tosfos says that would not be a problem of mipiyam below mipiksavam. We know that testimony has to be given orally and it can't be given from the writing of Edim. So if we know what was written in the shtar based on the first Edim and who are signed on the shtar and what the shtar said, maybe reproducing that shtar would be a violation of mipiyam below mipiksavam. It would be writing a new document and adjudicating cases using testimony that's in writing. So Tosfos says that's not a problem of mipiyam below mipiksavam. Why? Because we have a principle of edim hachasumim al shtar nase kemi shenechkara edusan bebezdin. That when you have witnesses who are signed on a document, it says if their testimony is being given orally and presented in front of the bezdin right now. When the second witnesses are testifying about what the first witnesses testified, what was written in the first document, it's really as if we're seeing the testimony of the first witnesses in Beis Din right now. It's as if they're giving that testimony orally, not through writing, and therefore it's not a violation of Mipiyam Belo Mipiksavam. It's really as if it's Mipiyam Mamish. It's as if it's really coming orally from the words. But nonetheless, Rami Bar Chama had asked this question, what is Rabbi telling us? Mike Mashmalan, what's the Mitzias? If we know what the star says, let's reproduce it. If we don't know what the star says, why is any of this relevant? It could have just been a piece of paper. So Amar Rava Tehei B'Ma'amino. Rava says, the case must be that the person who burned the star believes the person whose star was burned about what was written in the star, right? So let's say I burn your star, and you tell me that the star said that I was owed $100,000. If I believe you, that's when it's relevant that I burn your star. And nonetheless, Rabbah is telling us that you're pater, that you're exempt, because that's just grumma.
Even if it's the Baal Chov who burns the star?
Even if it's the Baal Chov who burns the star. Seemingly.
But
Hayitachen, right. It sounds like you could just go around burning people's stars. Right. It's a good point. But nonetheless, that's how grumma and Ezekiel pater works. If you're only indirectly causing damage, then you would be exempt. So Amar Rav Dimi Bar Chanina, Hadi Rabba Machlokes Rabbi Shimon Bar Rabbanani. Says Rav Dimi Bar Chanina, this case of Rabba, potentially could be all the cases, but I assume it's just referring to the previous case of burning a star, is really a Machlokes Rabbi Shimon and Rabbanan. Really is a debate between Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanan. The Rabbi Shimon da Amar Davar Hagorim Lamamun Kimamun Dami Mechayev. Rabbi Shimon throughout Shas assumes that something which causes financial loss, something which is sort of indirect financial loss, but nonetheless is financial loss, is obligatory. You could be obligated in such a case. And the Rabbanan, Damri Davar Agorim Lamamun Lav Kimamun Dami Lo Mechayev. The Rabbanan who assume that something which causes money, causes monetary value, causes financial loss, is not treated like Mamon, then you would not be obligated. Right? So what are we saying? Essentially, we're saying Ashtar is not money itself. Ashtar is not actually $100,000, but it's Gorim Lamamun. It causes money because it could be used for an $100,000 value. You can use it to collect your debt. So according to Rabbi Shimon, that a davar hagorim lamamon is kimamon dami, according to Rabbi Shimon, that something that represents financial value is like financial value itself, then if you burn someone else's shtar, you should be obligated. And only according to the Rabbanan, that a davar hagorim lamamon is lav kimamon dami, should you be exempt. So what Rabbah said, that when you burn somebody else's shtar, you're exempt, is really subject to a machlokas tanayim. So says the Gemara, maskev l'arafun v'rei de Yeshua, emar deshamas le'le Rabbi Shimon, davar hagorim lamamon kimamon dami, b'davar she'ikaro mamon. Rav Huna Bered Rav Yeshua says, you totally misunderstood. Maybe Rabbi Shimon wouldn't obligate you in such a case. Because when do we know that Rabbi Shimon says that something which causes money is like money itself? That's only something which inherently does have financial value. And the Gemara is going to explain, Kidarabba. Like Rabba's case, the Amar Rabba, because Rabba has told us elsewhere that Gazal Chametz Lifnei Pesach Uva Acher V'Sarfo B'Moed Pater Shakol Metzubim Alav Levaro. Let's say a person steals Chametz before Pesach, and then somebody else comes and burns that Chametz on Pesach, or at least during the Moed, Rashi says after there's an Isser Chametz and you have to burn the Chametz, which would be Midoraisa after the sixth hour on Erev Pesach. So if somebody burnt Chametz in such a way, you'd be Pater because everybody is obligated to burn Chametz at this time. But Le'achara Pesach, if you burn the Chametz after Pesach, then that's a Machlokas Rabbi Shimon V'Rabbanan. That's subject to a debate between Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanan. The Rabbi Shimon Amar Davar Agar Mil Mamon Kemamon Dami Chayav. According to Rabbi Shimon, that something which causes, with something that's indirectly financial, is treated like money itself, you'd be obligated. Why? Because this chametz, even though it's now Asr Ba'ana, because it's chametz Sha'avar Alava Pesach, it's chametz which has been passed over, literally by Passover, and has become Asr, and you can't benefit from it. Nonetheless, you could just return it to your friend and say, I stole this chametz from you, but it's still the same chametz, so you just take it back, even though it's changed, it's now Asr Ba'ana, because of chametz Shavar Lava Pesach, it would have become Asr anyway if it had been in your possession. So according to Rabbi Shimon, you'd be obligated there. And the Rabbanan, the Amri Davar Agar Mil Mamon Lav Kimamon Dami Pater. And according to the Rabbanan, that something which causes money, which represents money, is not like money itself, you'd be exempt, because that's not real money, even, it doesn't really matter that you could return it to the person. At the end of the day, it's not treated like money, and therefore you'd be exempt from burning it, for burning it after Pesach. But bedavar she'eini karo mamon mi amrinan, with something which is not inherently money, Rabbi Shimon never said that a davar hagorim l'mamon is kemamon dami. So it gets a little confusing there. The Gemara kind of breaks up its statement, but the Gemara really was just asking a question. Maybe Rabbi Shimon shouldn't obligate you if you burn the shtar of your friend, because Rabbi Shimon only holds that a davar hagorim l'mamon is like mammon if it's something which is inherently money, which inherently has value. So for example, if you have bread before Pesach, that's worth something. So even if it becomes valueless and it's only hadavar hagorim mammon, it only indirectly represents money because it was passed over by Pesach, that Rabbi Shimon would say is a davar hagorim mammon, and that's kemamon dami. But a shtar which never has financial value, which only indirectly represents value, but is never value itself, Rabbi Shimon may never say that a davar hagorim mammon is kemamon dami, and mimela everybody should agree to Rabba that if you burn your shtar of your friend, you'd be exempt, because it's never a davar hagorim mammon, neither according to the Rabbanan who never hold by a davar hagorim mammon, nor for Rabbi Shimon who generally does, because this is not a davar she'ikaro mammon. So Amar Amemar, now the Gemara goes on to Amemar. I think this is really a separate discussion, where Amemar is saying, about all these cases, that Man de Doin Dina de Garmi, Mag Bibeid Meshtara Ma'alya. A person who is Doin Dina de Garmi, a person who judges a case of Garmi, which is different from Grama, we're not going to get into the details, it's a really long discussion. The Rabban has a whole piece called the Kuntres Dina de Garmi, a whole notebook, literally, or a whole compilation, where he goes through the Din of Garmi, something that's really indirect. Generally, Garmi is assumed to be even less direct than Grama. And the Ramban tries to clarify what the difference is between Garmi and Grama and actual damage and Hezek She'enu Nikar and Hezek Nikar, various discussions. And I think Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein also has a whole piece on the Ramban's Kuntres Dina de Garmi. But what Amemar is telling us is if you generally adjudicate cases of Garmi, which Rashi tells us Rabbi Meir is the one who's assumed, we're going to have it in a couple daf later in the Masechta, Rabbi Meir is the one who's assumed to adjudicate cases of Garmi. So says Amemar, if you adjudicate cases of Garmi, then Magbi Beishmarta Shtar Ma'alya, you're going to obligate a person who burned his friend's star the value of that star itself. Uman Delo Dayandina Garmi, Magbi Beishmarta Be'ama. One who doesn't adjudicate cases of Garmi, in this case where you burn your friend's star, is only going to require you to pay for the value for the money of the paper itself, but not for the value of the shtar. And says the Gemara, Hava Uvda v'kafye Rafram l'Ravashi v'agbi bei ki kishura l'tzalmi. There was once a maisa where Rafram forced Ravashi, who apparently had burned his friend shtar when he was younger, he required him, that's what Rashi tells us, he required him to pay the full value of the shtar. Rashi says, ki kishura l'tzalmi, literally this is referring to beams, but Rashi says, piron gamur mina idis. He had to pay complete payment from his best land, kikorazu hanivcheres mishar koros the takim batsura udyuknos, like the best beam, which is the most fit to be used to to chisel out various images that you're going to make into this beam. So that's basically the discussion of Hasor Shtaros of Shel Chavero. If you burn your friend's star, Amemar concludes by telling us that only if you adjudicate cases of Garmi would you be obligated in such a case, and
no,
otherwise not.
If you adjudicate that, I think it means only if you hold of Garmi. If you hold that Garmi is Chayiv,
right, you're saying everybody adjudicates
it,
but
distinction.
Everybody adjudicates it, but if you're not done dining garmi,
you're not
adjudicate
done,
and you,
no, you don't hold from the whole concept.
Right, okay, yeah. Enach now. Right, adjudicate and obligate in such a case, right. 100%. Fine. Now the Gemara is going back to chametz v'avra leba pesach, omer lo harei shel chalav anecha. If you have chametz, which then was passed over, again, I don't mean to use the pun, but it's the best way to explain it, that Pesach passed through, you know, passed in duration over the Chametz, then you could say Harei Shel Chalav Anecha, and that's quoting from the Mishnah that we had on Sari Baba Mebez. If you steal Chametz from your friend and then Pesach happens, you could just give it back and say, here's your Chametz, I didn't do anything. Pesach just came, and that's what happened. So, Ma'antana Omrin B'Yisrei Hana Harei Shel Chalav Anecha. Ask the Gemara, who's the author of this Mishnah, which says that when you have an Isra Hana, when you have something which became Asr Hana, you could just give it back to the person and say, here you go, here's your Chametz, here's your Shor Niskal, here's your whatever the case may be. So, Amar Rav Chista, Rabbi Yaakov. He says, Rabbi Chista, the author of this Mishnah is Rabbi Yaakov, Titania, because we have a Brisa which says that Shor Shehemi, let's say you have an ox which kills a person, so Achelo Nigmardino, Mechor Macher, if the ox has not yet been sentenced to death, then if you sell the ox, it's considered a valid sale, and you would no longer put the ox to death. Hikdisho Mukdash, if you sanctify it as a korban.
Say you wouldn't put the ox to death.
Yeah, I think Rashi says like that, no?
Yeah.
Macher Rashi velo yisakel, and you can no longer stone it. Debeinan misa ba'amara b'din sheyashav k'echad. Right, we need the death of the shor and the case that's going to be adjudicated in Beis Din to be shavin k'echad, meaning that it has to be owned by the same person throughout the duration of the case. But if you sell it before nigmar dino, then it's now owned by somebody else. It's a valid sale, and you can no longer put the shor to death. Also, if you sanctify it as a korban, it's considered sanctified. Shachto b'saro mutter. If you shech the animal, it's considered mutter b'achila. You could eat that meat. Hechziro shomer l'baylov muchzar. And if a watchman was watching this ox and you return it back to the watchman after it killed, that would also, sorry, to the owner. If the watchman returns it to the owner, that would be a valid returning. He would no longer be obligated for any damages that the shor caused while he was watching it. Now, Mishanigmardino, if you do any of these things after the shor was sentenced to death, then Mecharo Eino Macher, the sale is invalid if you sell it. Hikdisho Eino Muktash, the sanctification is invalid if you sanctified it. Shachto Besaro Aser, if you shechted the Shechita is Aser and you can't eat the animal. And Hechziro Shomer the Bailov, Eino Muchser. If the Shomer, if the watchman returns it to the owner, that would not be considered returned. And Rabbi Yaakov Omer, Af Mishanigmardino, Hechziro Shomer the Bailov, Muchser. Rabbi Yaakov says, even after the ox was sentenced to death, if the shomer, if the watchman, returns the ox back to its owner, it would be considered mukhzar, it would be considered completely returned, and the watchman would no longer be obligated for anything that the ox did. So says the Gemara, we just have this brisa, and we're trying to say that Rabbi Yaakov, who appears in this brisa, is the author of our Mishnah. So my love, b'hak miflagi, isn't this the machlokas and that brisa between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yaakov? The Rabbi Yaakov savar, omrim b'yisurei hana'a, reishol chalif anecha. Rabbi Yaakov is assuming that when it comes to yisurei hana'a, like shor haniskal, you can just say to the person, Harei Shel Chalav Anecha, and that's why even after the ox was sentenced to death, in which case it's already Asur Ba'ana, the watchman can just give it back to the Bailim and say, here's your ox. And the Rabbanan assume you can't say B'Yisrei Hana Harei Shel Chalav Anecha. You can't just give the item back, and that's why Rabbi Yaakov would be the author of our Mishnah, which said by Chametz, you can just give it back to the person and say, Harei Shel Chalav Anecha. So Amar Lei Rabba, no, lo. Rabba says, no, the author of the Braisa, the author of the Mishnah, rather, is not Rabbi Yaakov. That's not the way to explain the machlokas between Tanakhama and Rabbi Yaakov. The Kule Alma Amrin and B'Yisrei Hana Harei Shel Chalav Anecha. Dimkein Niflegu B'Chametz B'Pesach. Really, everybody agrees that when it comes to Yisurei Hana, you could just give it back to the person and say, here's your item. Because if they argued about that, then why are they arguing about Shor Niskal? They should have just argued about Chametz B'Pesach. They should have argued about Chametz. Presumably, they'd have the same machlokas if it was about Omrim B'Yisurei Hana Harei Shel Chalav Anecha. And I would know that that's what they're arguing about. The fact that they're arguing about Shor Haniskal specifically tells me that it must have something to do with Shor Haniskal. Their machlokas must be related to Shor Haniskal and not be related to Omrim B'Yisurei Hana Harei Shel Chalav Anecha. Ella Amar Rabba, so I have the Girsa here that Rabba says, but really you could take out the words Amar Rabba. I saw that Girsa elsewhere because Rabba's already talking, so we don't need to say Amar Rabba again. Amar Le Rabba, so Ella Hacha begom rindino shoshor shalobafanav kamepagi. What Tanakam and Rabbi Yaakov are really arguing about is whether you can finish the case of the shor without the owner present. Rabbanan savri ein gom rindino shoshor shalobafanav. The Tanakam assumes that you can't finish the case of the shor without the bailim, without the owner being there. The amar le yatita niale habamarikna le leagma. Because that means that in a case of Hichziru Shomer Labailav, where the watchman returns the ox to the owner can say to the watchman, if you had returned the ox to me, I would have hidden the ox and made sure that they wouldn't complete the case in Beis Din of the ox and sentence it to death. But hashta misarte biyadman delo matzina lishtu yadina bade. But now that you've given the ox back, or now that you've brought the ox to Beis Din, you've put it in the hands of somebody that I can't deal with. I'm destined to lose this case because they're going to be gomrin dino or even shelo befanav. And therefore, the bailim really has a claim to make here. The bailim could say, I could have just hidden the ox, and I would have made sure that it wouldn't be sentenced to death. So now that it's been sentenced to death, now that nigmar dino, before you returned it back to me, then you're obligated to pay for it. Rabbi Yaakov savar gomrin dino shoshor shelo befanav. But Rabbi Yaakov, who assumes that even after the shor was sentenced to death, you could still return it to the bailim and say, here's your shor back. He's assuming that you could adjudicate the case and complete the case of the shor without the bailim. And therefore, it doesn't matter that the shomer let the ox get sentenced to death before he returned it to the bailim, the amrle, because he could say to the bailim, he could say to the owner, my avdile, what did I do to you? Sof sof have a gamrle dino shelo befanav. Regardless, Beis Din would have just adjudicated the case without you, even if you had hidden the shor, whatever the case may be, Beis Din would have completed the case even without the owner present. And therefore, the fact that I let the case be completed and I let the shor get sentenced to death is inconsequential, is irrelevant. That could have happened anyway, because Gomer Dino Shoshor Shelo Befanav, we could complete the case of the shor even without the bailim. And therefore, Rabbi Yaakov holds that Af Mishnig Mardino Hechzir Shom the Bailav Muchzar, even after the shor was sentenced to death, if the watchman returns the shor to the owner, he'd be exempt from payment. So that's really this Machlokas Tanakam and Rabbi Yaakov. They're really arguing about whether you can complete the case of the shor without the bailim. It has nothing to do with Omrim Bisurei Hanah Reishol Chalafanecha, and therefore we don't have a proof that Rabbi Yaakov is the author of the Mishnah. So Ashkechei Rav Chisda L'Rabba Bar Shmuel. Rav Chisda, who was the one who had suggested that Rabbi Yaakov would be the author of the Mishnah, then found Rabba Bar Shmuel. And Amrle Tanisa Midi Bisurei Hanah, he said, do you have any statements? Did you teach anything about Isurei Hanah? So Amrle in, he said, yeah, I did teach something. Tanina, I taught that the Heshev is like Zeila. The Pasuk says you have to return the theft that you stole. So Ma Talmud Lomar Asher Gazal. Why does the Torah then say the theft that you stole? We could have left out those words. So Yachzir Kein Shegazal. That teaches me that you have to return the theft just like you stole it. Mikan Amru, and therefore the Chachamim said that Gazal Mapeh Venifsal, if you steal a coin and it is no longer valid as currency, or Peros Verikivu, you steal fruit and it rots, Yayin Vehechmitz, you stole wine and it turns sour, Truma Venitmes, if you steal Truma and it becomes Tameh, Chametz ve'alvar alav ha-Pesach, you have Chametz and then Pesach happens. Behema v'nev daba avera, if you steal an animal and then a sin is done through the animal, that would make it no longer eligible to be used as a korban. Beshor ad shelo nigmar dino, or if you steal an ox before it becomes sentenced to death, then omer lo harei shelcha lefanecha. Then you could say to your friend, take your item back, here you go, that's considered kein shegazel, you're returning it exactly the way it was before. So says now Rabba Bar Shmuel, man shamis le da'amar achelo nigmar dino in, misha nigmar dino lo. This brisa said specifically if you steal an ox which has not yet been sentenced to death. So he said, who's shita, from whom have we heard that it makes a difference whether the shor was sentenced to death yet or not? That only when the shor was not yet sentenced to death can you return it, but after it was sentenced to death you cannot return it. That's Rabbanan. That was the position of the Rabbanan, the Tanakama, in that brisa that we just saw. V'katani chametz v'arba alav ha-pesach omer lo harei shelcha lefanecha. And nonetheless, the brisa says that if you stole chametz and then Pesach happens, you can give it back to the person. So what you see clearly from this brisa is that the Rabbanan, who are the ones who say only before the shor gets sentenced to death, but not after, also hold that you can say by chametz, you can say by Yisurei Hanah, harei shelcha lefanecha, that would show that the Mishnah could even be like the Rabbanan, not necessarily like Rabbi Yaakov. So Amar Leh, Rav Chisda then says to Rabba Bar Shmuel, Imishkachas lehu lo teim lehu velo midi. If you find them, which Rashi says, if you find the Talmidim in the Beis Medrash, don't tell them about this brisa, because Rav Chisda earlier had tried to establish the Mishnah as being like Rabbi Yaakov. Now this brisa seems to indicate that the Mishnah could even be like the Rabbanan, and therefore Rav Chisda sort of wants to hide this brisa and make sure it's not taught, lest the Rabbanan and the Beis HaMedrash laugh at him because he was trying to establish the Mishnah as not being the way that it would really seem to be. Now, just one more case from the last Mishnah. Peres v'irkivu omer la'arishol chalfanecha. If you stole fruits and they rot, you can just give it back to the person. So ask the Gemara v'hatnan, peres v'irkivu mishalem kashas akzela. I thought the Mishnah had told us that if you steal fruits and they rot, you have to pay back the initial value of the fruits. So we seem to have a stira. Can you just give them back or do you have to pay the initial value? Amar Rav Papa, kanshi rekivu kulan, kanshi rekivu mitzasan. Rav Papa says, it depends if they all rotted or they only part of them rotted. If only some of them rotted, then you could just give them back. But if they all rotted, then you have to pay back the initial value. You can no longer just give back the fruits. Good. Says the next Mishnah. Natan le'umanin atakin v'kilkalil chayav v'nashalim. Let's say you give something to workmen to fix, to improve in some way, and they end up damaging or they end up breaking it, they'd be obligated to pay for that. So for example, Natan l'charash sheda teva u'migdal atakin v'kilkal chayav v'nashalim. Let's say you give all these different types of boxes. I think literally a sheda is a chest, a teva is a box, and a migdal is a cabinet. But let's say you give them to a carpenter in order to fix, and he or to work on, to improve, and he ends up damaging them, he'd be obligated to pay. Let's say you have a builder who's accepted that he's going to destroy a wall, that he's going to take down a wall, but inadvertently he damages the stones, he breaks the stones, he'd be obligated to pay for that. But hayasoter mitzadzev enafo mitzad acher pater. If he was trying to destroy the wall from one side and a stone fell from the other side, we'd assume he's pater. We'd assume that's indirect cause and he would not be obligated for that. But if the stone that fell on the other side of the wall fell because of his strike, because of the haka that he was making to destroy the wall, then he would be obligated because you'd assume that's direct. Now, Amar Rasi says about these cases in the Mishnah. It's only true that the uman, that the workman, let's say the carpenter, is going to be obligated if they damage something that you gave them to improve or to fix. If, let's say, you gave a carpenter either a chest or a box or a cabinet in order to insert a nail into these items, and he tried to insert the nail into the item, but he accidentally broke the item, then he'd be obligated to pay. Let's say you give the carpenter completely new wood that he's going to use to construct a chest or a box or a cabinet. And he actually does construct that item, vishibran, and then he breaks the kli on accident, that would be pater. In such a case, he'd be exempt. My time, why would he be exempt in such a case? Because uman kona bishvach kli. We have a principle that an uman is kona bishvach kli, that an uman acquires the item that he's creating as he gradually improves it. So essentially what happens is an uman is hired, a workman is hired to build a shita teva umigdal. We assume that as he improves the item, more and more of it becomes his. He's gradually building this item, which at the end of the process will be fully his. And when he's done with it, he'll basically sell it to the person who's paying him for it as a sale. But so long as he's working on it and so long as he hasn't given it to the person, it's technically considered his. He's kona in it. He gets ownership rights to it. And therefore, when he breaks it in such a case, he's going to be exempt because he's damaging his own item. So ask the Gemara, it's not. We have in the Mishnah, then natan le'umanim bekilkalu chayavin l'shalim. The Mishnah said that if you give to workmen to fix and they accidentally break it, they'd be obligated to pay. So my love, isn't the case of the Mishnah where the workmen are obligated to pay, the yayiv lehu eitzim, isn't the situation where you gave the person wood in order to construct an item for you? And so it would sound like in the Mishnah that even where you give them wood, if they break it, they're obligated. Why did Rav Asi just tell us that if you give them new wood, then uman kona bishvach kli, then the workman acquires the item gradually as he's building it and would be exempt from paying if he damages it because it's considered his? So it says Gemara, lo, you misunderstood that Mishnah. It's sheda teva umigdal. It's assuming that you're giving the workman, you're giving the carpenter a chest or a box or a cabinet to work on. And in such a case, Rav Asi agreed that you'd be obligated to pay if you damage it. But if you give them new wood, the Mishnah would not indicate that you'd be obligated. The Mishnah would agree with me, Rav Asi, that you're exempt. So ask Gemara, how many tani seifa sheda teva umigdal, mechal de resha, eats him. But the Mishnah is going to go on to discuss a case where explicitly where you give the workman a box or a chest or a cabinet. So that implies that the beginning of the Mishnah, where they don't specify that they're talking about a chest or a box or a cabinet, the assumption is the Mishnah is talking about giving the workman trees, giving the workman wood, giving the workman etzim. And nonetheless, the Mishnah seems to say that you're chayev. So that, again, seems to be against Rav Ashi. So answers Rav, Rav Asi. So answers Rav Asi, Amri, Prusha, Kamafareshla. The Mishnah, which later is going to specify Shita Teva Omegdal, is really clarifying, really explaining the beginning of the Mishnah. Because Ketzad, what the Mishnah means to say is, what's the case where you give something to a workman to fix and he breaks it where they're obligated? Let's say, Natan Le'umanim Le'takin V'Kilkalu Chayavin L'Shalim. Or Ketzad Natan Le'umanim Le'takin V'Kilkalu Chayavin L'Shalim. What's the case where you give to the workman and they're obligated to pay? Kegon She'Natan L'Charash Shita Teva Omegdal. Like a case where you give a carpenter a chest or a box or a cabinet. But it's really just explaining the Mishnah was never talking.
It's not two cases.
Right, just one case. The Mishnah was never talking about first wood and then a chest, a box, or a cabinet. It was one case of a chest, box, or a cabinet. In such a case, you'd be obligated, but if you give them new wood, you'd be exempt. It's logical that the Mishnah is dealing with a ketzah that is just explaining, but it's all one case. If you think the beginning of the Mishnah is telling you that you're giving wood to the carpenter, and nonetheless you're chayav, then hashta ashmeinon eitzim chayavim l'shalim. If the Mishnah in the beginning is telling me that when you give the workman wood, you're obligated to pay, and we don't assume that the workman slowly acquires the kli as he improves it, then sheita teva umigdal mibaya. Then isn't it obvious that you would have to pay if you give the workman a sheita teva umigdal and he damages it? If just giving him wood would make him responsible, then certainly giving him a used finished kli and he damages it, he'd be obligated to pay. The Gemara says, no, that's not a good hachanami mistavra to prove that we're dealing with two different cases, because imishum ha lo irhya. That's not a good question that once I know that you're obligated on Eitzim, you're obviously going to be obligated on a Sheva Teva Umigdal, because Tana Seifa Legluya Reisha. The Mishnah just taught the second case to inform us about the first case. Shelo Toma Reisha Sheva Teva Umigdal. Don't think that the first case, which says you're obligated, is talking about a chest or a box or a cabinet. Aval Eitzim Lo, but if you gave the workman wood, he'd be exempt from paying because Uman Kona Bishvach Kli. That's not right. Rather, Tana Seifa Sheva Teva Umigdal, the second case in the Mishnah is specifically taught about a chest or a box or a cabinet. Michal de Reisha eats him to tell us that the first case was talking about wood, and nonetheless, even though you're giving the workman new wood, and generally we would assume Uman Kona Bishvach Kli, here that's not the case. Here the Uman is obligated to pay even for working on the new wood. Okay, we'll stop over here.
Thank you very much.